Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Steve Greenfield, and Steve is going to talk about the opening of the economy. So, Steve, how are you this morning?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm not doing too badly. So, give us your thoughts on reopening the economy. What's going to happen?
Okay, well, the first thing that we have to be clear about, which I really wish were the same preface that everyone being asked this question, whether they're a television commentator or a New York Times columnist or a candidate running for office in any party, I think the first thing that everyone needs to say, because it's the absolute truth, is that nobody really knows. Okay, and it's worse than just nobody really knows. Nobody even has a fairly informed opinion, because we are in a situation right now in which variables have been raised that have never been raised before in the history of economics. And since they've never been raised before, nobody knows what they indicate and what the implications of that are going forward from here. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing I want to say, is I don't want anyone to say that Steve Greenfield said that he knows what's going to happen. In fact, the most important thing I can say on my own behalf, because I am running for Congress this year on the Green Party line as an outside candidate, is that I don't know. But the reason that I'm telling you that is because I'm honest. Okay, I think that everyone voting this year, no matter who they should vote for, should understand that they're voting for people who don't know. All right, and so the question then becomes, what do you want to do with that piece of information? What do you as a citizen want to do with the information that you don't know and the people that you're voting for don't know either? And I think the most important thing in that setting is to say, well, who's being honest with me? You know, and so that's why I want to be honest and start out by saying that. But of course, I did major in economics in college, and there are a couple of things I know about the variables that we're facing. And what their potential implications are, there are some things that we do know will not happen, right? None of us know what will happen, but there are some things that we do know about what will not happen. And most of the mainstream, in fact, all mainstream candidates and all mainstream pundits are not speaking to the questions of the things we know will not happen. And so maybe that's where I want to frame that's the context from which I'm going to be speaking today in answer to that question. Okay, so the first thing we know will not happen is that there will not be sufficient consumer spending once things start to reopen to bring things back to where they were before this started, right? We are all suffering tremendous financial loss. Well, actually, I don't want to say all of us, because obviously Jeff Bezos just got about $20 billion richer. There are, you know, as in any crisis, your bankruptcy lawyers, they make a lot of money, right? There's always people who actually come out ahead on everybody else's misery. But overall, by and large, you know, to our audience here on this show today, and the average American, we've all suffered substantial financial losses and losses to our pension plans, our 401ks, right? Anything we had investment value in, the value of our homes, you name it. We've all suffered tremendous financial losses. And so even if our own individual incomes get restored in the near future, it's going to be a long time before we're comfortable with the levels of consumer spending that we were at beforehand. Because we all have to do a lot of restoration of our finances before we can start buying flat screen TVs again, right? I mean, we've got to refill our pensions. We've got whatever, right? Whatever losses we've made. So it's going to be a long time, even for people whose incomes start getting restored in the near future, before even those people start spending again. And, of course, the people who don't get rehired quickly, they're not going to be spending at all. And we live in a, you know, an overwhelmingly for-profit, consumer spending-driven economy. The number remains stable. 70% of our economy is consumer spending, right? And if 70% of our economy is consumer spending, and we're a very, very long way away from having consumer spending be facing conditions in which we'll be willing to spend at the levels we used to, we have to face that, right? That's one thing we know. One thing we know is not happening is that consumer spending is not coming back, you know, on any kind of foreseeable timetable. Let me ask you this question.
We know that I'm a retired state worker. So I have my pension. I've got my Social Security. My income has not gone down. So I think I'm lucky, and that municipal workers, government workers who are retired, kind of like will be holding the economy up and not bringing it down. What do you think?
Well, you know, the people who are currently retired and on pensions that are guaranteed to remain stable, you know, which are definitely, you know, your retired public sector workers, have that kind of special comfort going for them. But you also know that people who are on private pensions, even if those private pensions are from giant corporations, do not have their pensions guaranteed, even though they're retired, because all a company needs to do is declare bankruptcy, like we saw with Enron, you know, and MCI and Evers WorldCom. All a major Fortune 500 corporation has to do is for bankruptcy, and they're immediately allowed to suspend their pension requirements, right? So most retired workers do not have any guaranteed income besides their Social Security, which is obviously not a lot of money. That's not if you're living only on Social Security, that's not a consumer budget. that's a roof over your head and a few things, you know, a budget. That's not a consumer budget. So, there are a small percentage of people in this country that are your retired public workers who are basically don't need to be in fear right now, right? So that's fine, right? We can talk about that. There are some people who don't need to be in fear right now. But that's not the same thing as something that's on enough of a scale to restore the economy as a whole, right? That just means that some people are lucky. Some people are lucky. You're lucky. I'm not lucky, right? I'm an independent contractor. I'm a musician, and public gatherings are prohibited right now, and that's how I make my money. I make my money entertaining people at public gatherings, and I'm an independent contractor, which means I don't have a pension plan. You know, when my time comes, I'll just be living on Social Security and whatever savings I set aside, right? I do set aside some personal savings, but now I'm not, and I'm drawing on those savings, right? So I'm a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Whenever I start working again, even if I don't go back to work as a musician, even if that's not possible, let's say I get a job working on a farm right here in New Paltz, like, I'm going to have to restore my lost savings before I become a consumer again. So that's to that point, right? We're not getting to that 70%, you know, of our economy that's based on consumer spending, and we're not getting there for a long, long time. A lot of people are not going back to work in the early stages. And even the people that aren't going to be consuming. There will be a flurry of consumption right away because people have been sitting at home. That's an important thing to know, right? But don't be distracted by that. There will be a lot of people go, oh, I'm going to eat. I'm going to go get food. I'm going to go out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to the movies. Like, yes, for a short while, people are going to be spending like crazy, but they're going to be only a small number of people. It's going to be the people who got their jobs back and have had their incomes fully restored. And then in 2 weeks' time, they're going to realize, like, okay, I got that out of my system. Now I have to think about my own job security. I need to put aside some savings. So the flurry will be a distraction. People will think, oh, wow, the economy's booming, but it's not. There's going to be some immediate spending by people who are just so grateful to be able to consume again, and then they're going to face reality. That's going to back off. So nobody should be distracted about a sudden flurry of spending. I'm sure the media will focus on that, and the politicians are going to certainly focus on that, but that's going to end in you know, anywhere between 2 and 6 weeks' time. You know, because that everyone will have gotten it out of their system. Okay, there's another thing everybody needs to know about the actual economy here when it's healthy, where it was right before it all fell off the cliff, which is that the total profit rate over our $20 trillion economy is 10%. And sometimes you might hear, oh, in the last quarter, it increased at a 25% rate. Then in another quarter, it backs off. You don't look at the quarterly, what the change is over the course of a quarter. You look at an annual GDP, and everybody reports what percentage of that was profit, right? That's tax report. You know, you get that from the IRS. So we run at about 10%. Yeah, some years it's 11, some years it's 8. You know, it's not a big deal. Think of it as 10%. And so what that means is that our 70% of consumer spending is generating an overall profit rate of 10%. And so that means if our consumer spending goes down just a drop, that 10% is gone, right? As soon as we get down, you know, that gets us to flat. That gets us to zero. If our consumer spending falls by, you know, so if our consumer spending falls by, say, 15%, then the overall profit rate of the total economy goes down to zero. If our consumer spending falls by 17%, we're in the red. We're losing money. Mm-hmm. Businesses are closing. And so this is something you and I have talked about on the side. We'll talk about this now today. We'll bring this in, which is that because we are a consumer economy, as soon as we start closing down the public benefits and relying for our sustenance on people's private incomes again, we're going to slip pretty quickly into a dramatic consumer spending recession, a traditional recession, right, where consumption went down, revenues go down, GDP contracts. We're, you know, this mandated stay-home order and the COVID-related stuff is blinding us to the fact that what's happening because we're staying home is that we're not consuming anymore. We're spending less, and that as mm-hmm. we continue to be unemployed, we're going to continue to spend less. And since we never sit around in our homes every day aware that this very flourishing economy we have has a 10% profit, you know, if I told you that number during good times, you'd probably think like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good, 10% profit. That's where investment money comes from. That's where our vacation money comes from. That's where my saving for college comes from, right? Sounds pretty good, 10% profit. But what you don't think about is how fragile that is because it's only 10%. There's no additional resiliency. There's no reserves to draw upon. It's not like we have 10% profit and then an additional 10% sitting around in a reserve fund so that the loss of the first 10% doesn't cause chaos because we've still got that other 10% in the bank to draw on to get us through it, to keep spending that amount. No, when we lose that 10%, we're over the cliff. We don't have a reserve. And so that 10% figure, like I said, it sounds good during flush times, but it's not good because the edge of that 10% is a cliff, not a cushion. We have no cushion. The cushion is zero. And so that's kind of where we are right now, which is that the cushion is zero. And anybody who starts making money in the near future is going to be working on their personal cushion because the impact of what we just went through financially and psychologically is so dramatic. You've even got people who still don't have health care, right? We're not instituting a federal single-payer health care system. So a lot of people, you know, it's not like the disease is disappearing. We don't have a treatment. We don't have a vaccine. So there's going to be a lot of people who go back to work who are going to be thinking, I better start stashing up some money in case I get sick, in case my child gets sick, if I get sick, I'm not going to be able to go to work. I'm going to have to quarantine myself, and I don't have health insurance. And so, you know, I need to start saving up whatever I can. So overall, this all adds up to the same thing, right? We're not going to be consuming at the kind of level that's going to get us into the black on the overall economy's rate of profit. We're not going to go above the zero line for a really long time. We're going to be in the red. Everybody who's in business is going to be in the red. You know how it is, right? We read about this stuff from time to time. If you're a retailer, you don't go into the black until people start doing their Christmas shopping. You go from January through October in the red. And then people start doing their Christmas shopping and there's a flurry and you finally turn a profit. If you're in a restaurant, you can't let people sit around talking after they're done eating. You need to vacate that table and sit somebody else down because your margin is so close that, you know, you need to serve a certain number of sittings every night or your restaurant goes out of business, right? And this actually happens during good times, right? Restaurants go bankrupt like 80% of the time, even when the economy is flush. So when the economy is not flush, when people are restoring their savings, when people are not working, when people are not spending, when we start reopening restaurants, that's going to feel pretty awesome for about a week. But then the restaurants aren't going to have any customers. They're not going to be able to pay their landlords. They're not going to be able to make payroll. And they're going to close down in droves, and then all their employees are going to be back on unemployment. And so we're going to be right back where we started. So that's why I'm emphasizing the things that we do know that we're facing, even though we don't know what's going to happen as a result of it. We need to speak honestly about the fact that we don't have, you know, we look at what the governor of New York is saying and what all the other governors are saying, right? They're talking about phases, and they're even describing to us what those phases look like. There's phase one, there's phase two, there's phase three, there's phase four. We don't know that. We know we can start phase one, right? Because that's just a policy decision. We're going to go into phase one. We don't know if we're going to phase two. Why is anybody even publishing what phase three is supposed to look like when we don't even know that we're ever getting to phase two? So what they're doing is they're trying to show you, as politicians, as people who want your votes, that they have a roadmap and that it's an optimistic roadmap. We're going to start at stage one, and that's going to be pretty small. And then based on how that goes, we're going to go to stage two. And by the time we get to stage four, man, things are going to be rocking. Things are just going to be rocking. But that's nonsense. Yeah. That's nonsense. Any responsible government official right now should be saying nothing except this is what my stage one policy looks like. What comes after that, I don't know, because I need to assess all, we all need to look at the data, not just the medical data, everything. Because if stage one rapidly produces a consumer spending recession, which it absolutely will, then you have to come up with something else besides stage two, because stage two requires a certain amount of consumer spending to have been generated by stage one. It's not just about whether it's going to cause a resurgence in the disease and what you do about the resurgence in disease. We know it's going to cause a resurgence in disease because people are going to be back in contact with each other. And is there a good medical plan to deal with that? Fine, great. You know, let's hope that that works. But your phase one moving to phase two also depends on consumer spending bringing you up to phase two. And let me
ask you this. There has not been a lot of documentation about the 1918 pandemic. But things that you're saying now, do you think it was relevant in 1919, 1920, with employment and lack of employment and lack of funds to buy stuff? Do you think it was as bad then as it will be now?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was, and there wasn't much talk of it back in those days because people were much more concerned about sort of social psychology and keeping everybody optimistic about the war effort, right? I mean, this struck during, peak World War One. You know, America joined World War One in 1917. The war had already been going on in Europe for 3 years by then. You know, we came in to kind of cap it off. So 1918 was the peak of American involvement in World War One, and the belief that we were saving the world, you know, making the world safe for democracy. But in reality, what ended up happening as a result of that is that the entire world, not just the United States, but the entire world actually sacrificed on purpose a massive amount of their population to the disease. Right? That's what ended up happening, right? 30 million, 50 million, what was the number? It was a mind-boggling number. In today's population, that would be, you know, 300 million people. We've got 7 billion people in the world right now. You know, we didn't even have half a billion in 1917. So what the world did, because it was at war in that moment, what the powers of the world did was actually sacrifice. And far more people died from the disease than died from the war. Far more. We all sacrificed everybody's lives. What would have been nice, what a socialist would have told you, what the socialists were saying, which is why they were being sent to jail, you know, free speech wasn't legal during wartime back in 1917, right? We know that Eugene Debs spent the whole war in jail. The head of the Socialist Party spent all of World War I in prison. But what socialists would have been saying in 1918, which they were saying, it was like, hey, why don't we end the war? There's nothing here we need to keep settling by violence. This is imperial warfare. The great empires are fighting each other over how to divide up access to the resources of the underdeveloped world and who's going to own them. And that's a stupid thing to be fighting about. Working people shouldn't be dying for that. That's ownership's business. That's the powerful people's interests and doesn't raise our wages in any way. And it is putting us to death in front of machine guns and artillery and airplanes, and it is putting us to death in the face of this disease, and we're dying by 50 million, 100 million at a time. And how about we just all agree to stop the war? Why not sign a ceasefire until we could find out what's happening with this disease? You know, but that couldn't happen back in 1917, and the people who were saying that were being put in jail. We're damn close to that right now. We're damn close to that right now, of another time where that scenario can be possible. And it's not necessarily even dependent on literally putting people in jail because they're speaking, right? Obviously, you and I are speaking right now. I've been begging for months, why isn't either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, God, during when the primaries were still underway, even Bernie Sanders wasn't specifically saying, I will, you know, just negotiate ceasefires in all the 7 wars that we're in right now and bring everybody back home and cut that budget and use that budget to build green energy, because we're going to be facing flooding and fires and famines, that we're not prepared to handle. And why we keep fighting all the 7 different wars all over the world doesn't make sense in the face of that. Bernie Sanders never once said that during the primary. You know, for all the good things he did say, he didn't clearly articulate, if you elect me, I'm going to quickly negotiate ceasefires. Yeah, even if it means the Taliban regains control of Afghanistan, that's less important than the other things we need to be doing right now. It was a mistake to go there in the first place. We lost. We're trapped inside the green line. Let's just get out of there. Let's just admit it, you know, and get out of there. Even Bernie Sanders wasn't saying that. So here I am saying that to you. And I'm actually parked at the moment right in front of the New Paltz courthouse, and I'm not being arrested, right? So at the moment, literally, I'm not being arrested for using my free speech because we don't have a law in place like Eugene Debs was facing, those wartime powers that were adopted that literally made it illegal for him to advocate against the war. So, no, I'm not being arrested. But on the other hand, you know, I've been arrested several times because I've crossed that little fine line there into something that is lawbreaking, right? In civil disobedience, I've trespassed on public property. I've refused orders to disperse, right? And so I've been arrested for that. Those are very, and I've gone to jail for that. But the question you have to ask yourself is, why did I do those things? Like, why did I and all those other people do those things that got us arrested? We did those things that got us arrested for the same reason that, the civil rights movement, that the lunch counter movement, that everything that was happening with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Martin Luther King, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, their voices were not being heard. When they were using ordinary speech, writing letters to the editor, standing on street corners handing out flyers, right? Their voices were not carrying, you know, and so they had to take an extra step and say, all right, we're going to need to do something that forces the media to start talking because we're going to be getting arrested and that's going to be visible. And we are still in that situation. And what we don't talk about is that trespassing on public property and doing things like stopping traffic or anything like that, believe it or not, here in New York as well as nationally, because of the Patriot Act and because of the various state versions of the Patriot Act, and New York has one of those, you could actually be arrested for terrorism for blocking traffic. They can say that created a public safety hazard, and so that it's terrorism. You could get a major felony sentence, 10 years, you know, in a, what used to be an ordinary civil disobedience situation. If we exchanged emails and held some meetings planning the stopping of the traffic, you can get added conspiracy, you know, for terrorism added on top of the act itself. So we do have some of those laws on the books right now. And so we are dangerously close to seeing those laws start to be prosecuted, right? Because as you know, you try to enter a race as a third party candidate and the Democrats, you know, activate all their lawyers and millions of dollars to keep you on the ballot. If you manage to stay on the ballot, you are maligned publicly as someone who's, you know, conducting a grave threat to America, right? I experience this every day of my life. If I am a grave threat to America, if that's the public perception of me, that I am a grave threat to America, then my personal safety is at risk, right? People might spit on me. That's an entry-level position, right? Or they might try to, if I'm standing on the street corner with my sign, might they try to sideswipe me? I've experienced public, you know, personal safety challenges when I've been out there doing my thing. And is that a function of so much money and time and social media and everything being expended on telling Americans, liberals, you know, not even conservatives, telling liberals that the thing that I'm advocating for will help Trump win and then the whole world comes to an end. And so this person, Steve Greenfield, is an existential threat to civilization. That's the kind of language that's being used. I live every day of my life, you know, kind of with a, I walk around with what we in the fire service call situational awareness, right? Or what police like, you know, I'm not panicked. I'm not afraid for my life at any given moment, but I do keep my eyes on the road. You know, I don't walk around with earphones in my ears. I listen, I have my ears open because that's the situation I've been placed in for no reason other than the fact that I tell the truth, right? And that's why, you know, maybe we're getting to the end of our time here. Let's get back to where we started. What's happening with the reopening? What's happening with the reopening is that we are going to go into a stage one reopening. Some people are going to be allowed back to work, right? What's going to happen after that? We don't know. I don't know, right? The things I do know is that consumer spending is going to remain really down for a really long time. And that none of the people talking about reopening is giving any plan for how to replace that lost spending so that the traditional capitalist, for-profit, consumer-based economy can go back to restoration, even though most individual consumers will not be spending. No politician has announced what's their backstop for that problem.
And, Steve, on that note, we've got to close. So give yourself a little plug. You're running for Congress in the 19th district in New York, right?
Yes, running against incumbent Antonio Delgado, who's straight Wall Street. He has no answers to any of these questions. And Republican to be named later because they have two people running in a primary, so we won't find out till June 23rd what's happening with the Republicans.
So I invite your potential candidates and your opposition to come on All Access Close to talk about what you have been addressing. So you have been listening to Steve Greenfield. This is All Access Close. If you like this show, like us follow us on Twitter. Steve, thanks. This conversation will be continued, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.